The Gavani think he's a heretic, and the other half believe him a savior. Because of his imprisonment by the spellmonger? I asked. No, actually, because of his cooperation with the Alka-Alon Council. There remains deep suspicion of them among the Gavani, more than for their more recent enemies. That's interesting, I noted thoughtfully. All right. Thank you again. You've been quite helpful, I said, figuring our discussion was over. I was mistaken. Oh, no, she said, putting her hands on her hips. This is the first decent invocation from you in months, and I'm not going to waste it. I need a few things from you, Menelan, she said evenly. From me? I asked, surprised. You know, I'm in the middle of a war right now, engaged in secret negotiations with the enemy while trying to save the world, I reminded her. You're between wars, actually. I just helped you with those negotiations, and this concerns saving the world, she retorted. It's wizard stuff, she added after a pause. I sighed. Well, I guess that's me then, I admitted. What service may I do for you, O goddess? I asked, with just a hint of sarcasm. You need to acquire an arcanist, she replied, her pretty lips twisted into a half smirk. You have too much wood in your fire right now, and you need some rocks around it. Come again, I asked, confused. Perhaps I'm missing the metaphor. You have a lot of different projects underway, she said, slowly and patronizingly. She began to tick them off on her fingers. A lick of flame curled up every time she touched one. Establishing the Mage Law, building Vanador, discovering the secret of Snowstone, negotiating with the Fundal, negotiating with the Alka-Alon, negotiating with the Gavane, building magical wonders, discovering the fate of the Forsaken, forging a lasting alliance between the Alka-Alon and humanity, and shepherding a small crowd of persistent gods, she added, her smirk finding fulfillment. That's a lot of sticks on fire. You need a ring of rocks to keep it contained, and a warden to tend them all, lest you court disaster. Do I have to sacrifice something to get you to speak plainly? An arcanist? I asked. What is that? You need a specialist in the general, a devotee of the obscure, someone who can keep the various flames going, but not so voraciously that they consume everything else. You need an arcanist. I need an arcanist, I asked, still confused. It's a general's term for a generalist, she explained. It hasn't been used much since the Majocracy, but there are a few who still find their passion in obscure texts and outlandish accounts, not in honest thaumaturgy or enchantment. They learn a bit of everything and try to establish the forest, not the trees. In the Majocracy, many noble houses of mage lords had libraries and laboratories staffed with an arcanist or two. It was recognized early on that over-specialization can lead to gaps in research. An arcanist can take a look at a project and often add perspective based on the occult lore he has accumulated. So, it's just a wizard who knows how to look stuff up, I offered skeptically. There's more to it than that, she dismissed. But you need one. Get one. Indeed, you already have one, if you think about it. An arcanist. Fine. Anything else? I asked. Did she just want to give me staffing advice? I wondered. I didn't mind the payroll cost, and the social status of employing my very own arcanist would no doubt make me the envy of the thaumaturgical community, who already envied me. So I'd get an arcanist. Yes, actually. The pyromancer who did such a delightful job burning down Tudri. I want you to send him to the Stenchworks to work with Ormar. He needs some advanced training. No problem, I agreed. I couldn't even remember the boy's name. He'd been working at Iltadine, helping with the foundries, but we could spare him. Next. Be on the lookout for more gods showing up in unexpected places and ways, she said after a moment's hesitation. Our efforts to find incorporated divinities are starting to pay off. The problem is, we don't know exactly how or who, she admitted. Well, that's helpful, I snorted. Just be prepared for sudden expressions of the divine occurring that lead to an appeal for permanence. And not all of them will necessarily be as cooperative and helpful as Ishii Harris and me. You think Ishii has been helpful? I asked, chuckling doubtfully. She looked uneasy about that. Great mystic forces are in play, she explained, or at least tried to explain. Being cryptic is one of the prerequisites for godhood, apparently. The rapid ascent of the spellmonger into the affairs of Kalador, and the changes you have wrought, have shaken the pillars of the world. The ripples of that have reached the ears of the divine. There is no predicting what may arise as a result. Be very, very careful with whom you invest the gift of permanence, Minilan, she warned. I always am, I assured her, knowing that it wasn't technically the truth. I'm sure she knew it too, but she had the divine grace not to point it out. But speaking of great mystical forces, what is this that Mudros told me about the end of magic in a mere 3,000 years? Brigger looked deeply troubled then and made a stunning admission. I don't know, Minilan, she confessed. None of us do. That was the first time it was revealed to us. Which brings me to the last request. Find out what Mudros meant about that, because that would be the end of us all. That is another reason why I suggest employing an arcanist. That secret has been kept from us, and it will take a fiendishly clever mind to unearth it in its entirety, one who can be devoted to the task. How do you expect me to figure it out? I challenged, a little irritated at her confidence, besides hiring an arcanist. Because you keep figuring things out when you're supposed to be getting slaughtered by Dark Lords, assassinated by your feudal rivals, or blown up by your experiments, she shot back. Don't ask me why you're being successful. It's beyond my power as your patroness to determine. As I said, great mystical forces are at play. Forces beyond the mere divine. The mere divine. That would require further contemplation, I realized. Perhaps with an ecclesiastic consultation and a good deal of drink. Mudros said that we're moving into some sort of dark region or light region or something, I mumbled, and that we had 3,000 years, and that the Vundle are panicking about it. All magic will fade, I recalled the sea mage telling me. Then we must know the details, and why we were denied this information. If the Alka alone know, we want to know why they didn't tell us. If the sea folk are preparing for mass extinction, that might affect humanity too. Find out what is actually happening, Minilan, she ordered. That seems like an appropriate challenge to a wizard of your stature. You feel I lack appropriate challenge? I asked, cocking an eyebrow. I want you to make this a priority, she said, unwilling to rise to the bait. That told me how serious she was being. Above everything else, the war, Korbal, even the Forsaken. Without magic, the gods. Well, we won't exist in this form anymore, she said sadly. Not that it would matter. We wouldn't have any humans to shepherd. Without magic, the world of Kalador as you know it will die. I realize that, I sighed. I don't take issue with the mission, goddess. Merely your confidence in my ability to fulfill it. Can you think of anyone else who could manage? She asked, a fiery red eyebrow cocked. Off the top of my head? No, not really, I admitted. Then you're the wizard we have, she said, facing me. Don't make me turn this into a divine command, she warned. Have I ever refused you? I shall do this, I agreed, if I can. I'm more than a bit curious and terrified by the idea myself. I'd like to understand it, and I'm curious as to why you do not. I'm an Arasi divinity, Min, she said with a frustrated sigh. I only started to manifest 400 years ago, and we didn't talk to a lot of educated urban deities up in the Vorian steppes, she said guiltily. We were in a cultural and military war with the Empire, and the sea gods of the Northern Seas are not a chatty bunch. Even after a bunch of us became syncretized with some of the local gods, we didn't always retain all of the lore of the Imperial side. But from what we can tell, they didn't know anything about it either. I'll question the Alka alone about it, I volunteered, and Forseti. But we may end up having to ask the Vandal. That might prove awkward, she guessed. Let's see what we can do on our own, shall we? You just go finish up your little war, she proposed, and hire a good arcanist, and we'll talk later. Don't worry, I'll banish myself, she said, disappearing in a flash of flame. I sighed, took a piss, and then went back into the tavern. Tyndall and Mavone were drinking from a flask, passing it to Cousy as if they were gentlemen in a salon. After consideration, I said, putting my pipe away, I think I favour this alliance. As a temporary experimental endeavour, I added, but we have some conditions. His Majesty suspected you might, Cousy agreed. They are. For one, I began, Asher Karl must be willing to stop eating humans. That is already being considered, he agreed. He must stop warring on my frontiers and pledge to withdraw any territorial ambitions against the Kasari tribes to the north. In return, the Kasari will stop any raiding into your territory. That would be agreeable, Cousy nodded. It would allow Asher Karl to redirect forces from his northern borders to his southern frontiers, where the greater danger lies. You can forswear the Kasari will obey your command, he asked suspiciously. I have a lot of influence with them of late, I said without elaborating. Next, his court must renounce their genocidal mission. If we agree to cooperate with the Goblin King, it won't be so that our descendants can fight for their lives against his descendants. I will relay that request, Cousy agreed. Lastly, I wish for him to repatriate any human slaves in his lands who wish to leave. I will make room for them in my lands. Human lords and their vassals who wish to remain under his banner, we will not attempt to compel them, I said a little darkly. Those renegades were widely feared and hated in the eastern vales of the wilderlands. We didn't want them. There are few, but I will pass along the request, Cousy sighed. In return, any Gavani who wishes to defect from Korbal's legions to support Asher Karl will be allowed to peacefully do so. We will spread the word, he added. We have many confederates within his ranks, Gavani who have not had a chance to desert yet. I can agree to that, I nodded. Perhaps we can arrange some sort of exchange later. There is the matter of shared intelligence, Cousy continued. We will pass along what news we have and will expect the same in return. Mavone is my chief of intelligence, I said, earning a short bow from the man. He will arrange the details. I'll likely use Janik, Mavone suggested. He is known to both sides. I can have him meet your agent any number of places along the penumbra. Yes, he's a clever one for a minstrel, Cousy conceded. His family has always been involved in affairs in the north. My man will be a fellow named Lersan, a former carter. He's an aide of mine, of sorts. What password shall I give him? Biscuits, I suggested, in honor of Brigga. She appreciates that sort of little touch. And honey shall be the countersign, Mavone agreed. Where shall they meet? Varone, suggested Cousy. That took me by surprise. Varone, you have agents there. I do, but they are in my service personally, Cousy said. They know not for whom they truly work. Their son is the one I send there to collect the news. He has a talent for escaping notice. And Janik compels notice to the distraction of anything else. Mavone nodded. A good pairing. And when shall we expect him? He can leave word with the mirror array there. If you can arrange a trusted agent, that is where I shall send word of Asher Karl's thoughts on the matter. I can, Mavone assured. Leave that to me. I will prepare a report to present to His Majesty, if you will do likewise. I look forward to it, Cousy agreed, but we must keep this alliance secret. From Asher Karl's court, the Alshari court, and most of all from Korbal's court. If he suspects we are acting in league, he will spare no force to shatter the alliance. Beginning with Asher Karl, he warned. We agree, I said, glancing at my men for their approval. Perhaps if we both survive to midsummer, we can quietly suggest the idea to our respective folk. But for now, We must be vigilant about security. Then we have an agreement, Sire Cousy of Beauval Vale said, as he pulled on his gauntlets. Do pass along my regards to Sir Kay. Sire Kay, he corrected himself. I do wish him the best of health and prosperity. I shall, I agreed. Perhaps one day you can wish him so yourself, I said, wondering at the wisdom of such a meeting the moment I mentioned it. Perhaps I will, the old wreck of a traitorous knight said, as he pulled on his helm over his viscously scarred face. Stranger things have happened in this life. I couldn't argue with him there. I just had a chat with a goddess before proposing an alliance with the Goblin King. I didn't think my life could become much stranger. Some god, somewhere, apparently saw that as a challenge. Chapter 7. The Interrogation of Kudoz. Evil makes its own prison. Wildolan's folk saying, from the collections of Janik the Rish. I'd been at a loss for insight into Shakathet as a commander. We only had a few scraps of information on that subject. Gajakatar's reputation was blatant, as he'd done his best to spread it among friend and foe before the battle. Shakathet was less expressive about his ego, and his history with Korbal was both longer and more intimate with Korbal than Gajakatar. The problem was, I didn't know what that history was, and whether there was something there I could exploit. Then it occurred to me, that evening, with Ruderal, that I was not without resources who could provide that insight. Indeed, I had almost forgotten that we had prisoners. One would be Maisin Amana. She was in the care of the emissary Felowen, near to Sevendor. She would have been the closest one to Korbal, but also the Nemavort, least likely to betray her beloved. As she was also responsible for the death of Felowen's mother, I could be assured that her interrogations had not revealed anything as of yet. I shuddered to think how they were conducted. But Maisin Amana was not the only Nemavort we'd captured. Dara, my former apprentice and current vassal, had managed to capture one who was trying to capture her, back in Olam Saheri. He was a really nasty piece of work named Kudoz. Dara caught him off guard and stuffed him in a huckster pocket. After the battle, she'd given me the wand with the undead lord inside, and I'd in turn sent it, by Lady Varen, to the Alka-Alon city of Enus Yatharel for safekeeping. That had been before I'd been made the Count Palatine of the Mage Law, when Lord Letheren, who ruled Enus Yatharel, was a distant lord. Enus Yatharel was in the western Colleens, hundreds of miles away from Sevendor on the other end of the Colleens. Now he was but 100 or so miles from where I lived. That made us neighbours. I had ignored that fact up to now. Letheren was not fond of the humans who infested his lands, but he recognized the necessity and eventually accepted it. He had tried to ignore us, as much as possible. His keep was set impossibly high in the great peaks of the Colleens, overlooking the wilderlands all around. Getting there by foot or horse was a legendary endeavor. Unfortunately for Letheren, getting there by dragon was significantly easier. Twice now, the fire-breathing worms had assailed the fair towers of Enus Yatharel, which were built before humanity emerged from the void. They still bore the scars, the very stone melted by the ferocious heat. I had sympathy for the Alkan. I didn't like us sometimes either. But when Fair and Thatiel, the City of Rainbows, was overcome, Letheren took note. When dragons raged against his city, he prepared himself for war. I saw us as neighbors in a dangerous neighborhood. We needed each other. The problem was, Letheren didn't really see it that way. Nonetheless, he had favored the establishment of the Berian Council, an organization of powerful human magi and potent spellsingers of the Alka-Alon, designed to combat the forces of darkness and leave him the hells alone. But it was through the auspices of the Berian Council that I imposed upon him for assistance. He'd taken possession of Kudoz, still locked in the huckster pocket of a wand. Now I was imposing on him for a secure place to interrogate the Nemavort. I made the request through Lelastian. Though he despised her as a rebel, as well as for her affection for humanity, Letheren reluctantly agreed to my request. He also insisted on being there. It was an anxious time. No one was eager to confront an Emmervaunt, even one in a weakened position. I discussed the situation with Terlemen and Pentandra, both of whom had experience with the matter. After heeding their advice, I sent ahead our requirements for the interrogation, and a few days later, the Lastian reported that Letheren was ready for our embassy. I chose my delegation carefully. The Lastian was included for a variety of reasons, and Mavone came along as my chief of intelligence. Terlemen and Sandoval deferred. They had pressing duties elsewhere and trusted my judgment. I asked Onranian to attend, and Lady Ithalia. The more Alka Alon in the entourage, I reasoned, the better. As my best advisor on the undead, I invited Taran, and on a hunch, I included Gareth, over the heads of older and presumably wiser magi. But I also added Ruderol, not only for his ability to read enneagrams, but to give him the knowledge he sought about his self-declared foes, the undead. It was a somber party that transported through the ways that day. None of us looked forward to the interrogation. From what Dara had reported, Kudoz was not only a heartless Emmervaunt, dedicated to his own immortality, but he also styled himself a vivisectionist, a scholar who studied the physiology and pathologies of a species by cutting them up, bit by bit, while they were still alive and able to report. The few rumours about Kudoz I had gathered involved a series of experiments so horrid that he had been among the first of the Nemovorti entombed with his master by the Alka Alon Council. There weren't a lot of details available, and my imagination was all too willing to provide the most unsavory possibilities. But by all accounts, Kudoz was of a special interest to the Council due to his vile habits. While there was no doubt that his work had collected valuable information on physiology, the cost of his research was deemed too harsh to bear by all who heard the details. Kudoz is a psychopath, Lelastian explained to me as we prepared to depart Vanador for Enes Yatharel. Not just an ordinary psychopath, either. He's on par with Korbal himself. He's an obsequious sadist who rose to power in Korbal's court due to his complete detachment from any moral basis. His willingness to slice up Korbal's opponents in the name of legitimate scientific inquiry turned the stomachs of the strongest on the council. He's the worst sort of criminal, she pronounced, frowning. And he was bested by Dara, I reminded her. She got lucky, Lelastian insisted. She had the advantage and took him by surprise. But she got lucky. More praise to her for it. But had she fallen under Kudoz's clutches, her death would have been long, painful, and singularly horrific. Kudoz's cruelty was legendary back in that day, Onranian agreed, solemnly. When the Council's forces finally took his laboratory in the Land of Scars, what we found there was, well, several of the Alkans committed suicide, he said, disturbed. As a rule, I knew the Alka Alon only took their own lives in fits of utter hopelessness and despair. It was a major theme of their unwritten literature. Others sought exile to remove the stain from their minds, agreed Lelastian. Of all of Korbal's agents, there are few who inspire more terror than Kudoz. Sounds like a cheerful fellow, I nodded. What might serve to loosen his tongue, I asked. He famously has no pursuit beyond pure science, offered Onranian. Of all of Korbal's colleagues, he was devoted to his research over any mere political or ideological position. Oh, he paid homage to the Enshadowed's warped ideology, but only because it justified his work, he said, his voice hollow. Not even the other Enshadowed liked Kudoz, Lelastian agreed. Among all of the killers and assassins Korbal gathered under his banner, he creeped out every one of them. He does suffer from the same weaknesses of all Nemovorti, offered Gareth. Lady Pentandra has lectured at length about her theories on the power of vibrant energies on undead physiologies, he suggested. Nemovorti don't feel much pain, but they can be hurt, he counseled. What you call vibrant energies don't tend to be the type to inflict damage, Onranian suggested, but it's worth a try. I'm more than happy to seduce a maid and rut in the corner if it helps your interrogation.
Duly noted, I answered dryly. But I think we can find a more acute source of such power.
Wizards, scowled Don Ranyan. You take the fun out of everything.
Minolan is well supplied with a wellspring of power, reminded Delastian. His little snowflake can produce an abundance in nearly any octave.
I don't think you'll have to rise to the occasion, she said slyly. Just trying to be helpful, muttered Don Ranyan.
Our best bet is to convince him that his existence is at risk, counseled Lelastian.
Kudoz knows that his proclivities are condemned by even his allies in the court of Olam Saheri. Korbal's patronage is the one thing that has kept him from being destroyed by his own folk. Threaten that, and I think you will have the leverage that you need to learn the intelligence you desire.
Got it, I nodded. Don Ranyan, will you do the honors?
It is time, I concluded as I summoned my baculus, Insight.
Of course,
he murmured, and sang a bit of spell work. In an instant, we were in Enes Yatharel. The difference from Vanador was instantly apparent. My ears popped at the higher altitude, and as I struggled with the expected nausea, I couldn't help but notice that we were anticipated. There was a small crowd of Alka Alon around the waypoint, trying to conceal their amusement at the reactions of the Humani. Apparently, it's funny when we vomit.
Hail the spellmonger, Letheran pronounced dryly as I struggled to maintain my lunch. Welcome to Enes Yatharel. Let us proceed at once, he added, as I forced the heaving to stop by my will alone. I don't want to waste more time on this than necessary.
The Varian Council appreciates your assistance, my lord, Don Ranyan said brightly.
Spare me your charming antics, Don Ranyan, Letheran snapped. I am in no mood. I was hoping we could be consigning that creature to a permanent imprisonment inside that wand. Now you want to withdraw him and question him.
Surely, as a military Alcan, you can appreciate the value of good intelligence, my lord, Taran said respectfully. We face one of the Nemovort's fellows. Every bit of information we can collect is a treasure, he assured. We have prepared means to keep him imprisoned.
I prefer to slay my foes to capturing them, Letheran said darkly. Kudoz, especially. Of all of Korbal's minions to take, why did you select that abomination? He asked disgustedly.
It was not a choice, my lord, I assured him. My apprentice at the time was in a tight spot when the Nemovort menaced her. She dealt with him accordingly.
Your apprentice captured Kudoz? Letheran asked, surprised.
A girl of but 15 years, Lelastian agreed. The Hawk Maiden, the first of the Skyriders who ride the giant hawks. And that was after her bird was driven from the sky, she added.
Dara is a formidable girl, she praised.
Yes, Letheran said, his eyes narrowing. Those giant hawks.
My lord, Taran asked. Is that an example of Versalotti architecture? He asked, gesturing toward one of the greater towers.
I've learned a bit from the Karshak in Sevendor. The conversation devolved into small talk as the lord of the great city led us down a long, spiraling ramp that descended into the bowels of the metropolis. We passed a few Alka Alon on our way down into his dungeons and storehouses. I had assumed Kudoz would be imprisoned in such a lonely place, or Letharan merely wished to hide the presence of the Humani in his own halls. It was hard to tell. The chamber he led us to was low, to our stature, and required us to frequently duck our heads under stone arches. Alkan mage lights guided our way as we descended. I tried to note the details of the pillars and the stonework, all of which was beautifully decorated in the delicate style favoured by the Versalotti. Netheran and his people were taciturn when presented with our questions, and by the time we were halfway down to the dungeons, our conversation had ended in uncomfortable silence. The vault Letheran led us to was much more expansive than the tunnels. Indeed, I could not see the ceiling, though Insight was telling me we were deep underground. Letheran took us through 3 doors, each guarded and warded, before we finally came to the place. Once inside, we were privileged to see at least a portion of the great Alkan Lord's wealth.
I keep many of my more troublesome prizes here, he admitted, when the odd-shaped door was unlocked and opened. Some ancient relics. Indeed, some artifacts from the Alon homeworld, he said proudly, though it was clear he did not expect us to appreciate the value of that. We appreciate your attention to security, my lord, Taran offered. I cannot imagine it ever being stolen. Not unless the city above was in ruins, Letheran agreed, as he searched through piles of, well, I wasn't exactly certain what they were. Human hoards are easy to evaluate. We like gold and pretty glittery things. But the Alka-Alon value different things than we, and when the near immortals accumulated wealth, the treasures they valued were not mere coin or jewelry. I could not identify most of the odd items within the vault. A few resembled the thoughtful knife, or other Alkan artifacts I'd encountered over the years. But most I was completely unfamiliar with. They could have been powerful weapons, or just really intriguing nutcrackers. Netheran finally found the correct box, and took the plain wand from among other staves of weirwood. He looked at it disdainfully as he held it up to the light, and then he handed it to Lelastian, with a sour expression on his face. I have prepared a chamber for the questioning, he said, pushing past us all. It's on the left. Let us commence quickly, so that we may be finished with this distasteful task. We followed him to the room, a vaulted chamber with nothing within. Taran busied himself with setting up the wards he'd contrived from his experience at Castle Salesas, and he invited Rudoran's assistance in doing so. You are a bold folk, conceded Letheran as he watched the two wizards work. Many of my kindred would put off such work for a decade before they worked up the courage to confront such evil. My folk don't have the luxury of time, my lord, I suggested. We live but a half century or so, perhaps a bit longer. If we waited for the fullness of time to launch such an endeavour, we would lose what initiative we have, I reasoned. As practical as a Tal Alon, he said, partially insulting me while partially praising me. Let's see if you know your craft as well as you claim. I didn't respond to that, largely because I didn't want to give him the satisfaction, but also because I wasn't entirely certain he was wrong. We were practicing necromancy of a sort, just calling forth Kudoz from his Hoxter prison. Taran was confident that his special wardings would hold the creature in place. I wasn't so sure. The megalith hovered around my shoulders as we prepared to release the Nemovord. It would provide the power Taran would use to reanimate the Enneagram trapped in the corpse that Kudoz was riding within. He prepared the casting and gave me the slightest nod. I opened the Hoxter, and the body came tumbling lifelessly from the void. Kudoz was ghastly-looking, even for a Nemovord. Whoever the poor soul whose body he inhabited had been, he had been tall and skinny, with long arms and legs. I hoped he'd had hair. His bald head, now covered with some eldritch runes burned directly into the flesh, would have been improved by hair. But I was uncertain whether a beard would have helped that long, angular face or worsened it. It didn't take long for the reanimation process. Taran had become adept at it during his researches at Castle Salesas. He'd reanimated dozens of chickens as he tried to determine why Hoxters killed everything they swallowed. Summoning power from his own stone and the megalith, one by one he cast the runes to construct the complex spell. Then it activated. Kudoz's corpse began to twitch, as arcane energies in the necromantic octave filled his body and activated whatever dark spells allowed it to move. A kind of sickly wave of power washed over him, clinging to his face and eyes, his heart and his belly, before working its way methodically down his limbs. It only took a few moments for the activity to go from random spasms to conscious control. Indeed, it was frightening how quickly Kudoz returned from oblivion. The weepy, sallow face contorted as consciousness was born behind the rheumy yellow eyes. Their pale glow began to shine against the creature's sharp cheeks. Kudoz looked around in confusion, his glowing eyes casting about in confusion. He said three or four sentences in a language I didn't understand before finally suiting his tongue to his surroundings.
Where
am I?
He demanded, his voice harsh. It echoed eerily in the vault's recesses.
In Anas Yatharal, Letheran said sharply. You are a prisoner. Where did the human female go?
He asked.
And that avian?
His voice was a whine. She's safe, I answered. I name you, Kudaz.
Yes, that is my name,
the Nemavort agreed, dismissively. He pulled himself to his knees as he stretched out his arms and felt their length.
What did she do to me?
She placed you in an extra-dimensional space, I answered. You've been there for months.
Really?
That was unexpected, he admitted, as the consequences of his circumstances occurred to him.
You survived, then?
Did you destroy the city? He asked curiously.
Nay, Letheran growled. Not yet, but that day will come.
I did manage to lock Korbal in his festering human body until it falls apart, so there's that, I added. But you are now a prisoner of the Berian Council, in Lord Letheran's custody.
Then I expect a swift execution, Kudaz said, with an exaggerated sigh. I suppose that is a just fate for such a scoundrel as I,
he said with mocking contrition.
We are aware of the freedom that death would bring you, Taran said, as he adjusted his wards. We will not be tempted to slay you, just to encounter you again on the battlefield.
I would not be wasted on the battlefield,
Kudaz sneered haughtily as he wiped at his nose. There was a trickle of black ichor running from it.
I am one of Korbal's finest minds.
You all say that, I dismissed. I've yet to see much proof of it, save perhaps Mycin. She seemed a lass with wit.
If you like that sort of thing,
Kudaz said, finally standing. We're colleagues. She builds bodies. I slice them apart. She's our prisoner too, I said, walking to within a pace of the containment circle. She's being held elsewhere. The rest of your rotting kindred are scattered across the lands, seeking in vain to overthrow the Humani leadership, myself included.
Yourself. You. You must be that wizard,
Kudaz recognized, glancing at the megalith.
The one that Korbal was so vexed with. The one with the ego.
Yes, Minalan the Spellmonger, I supplied. And it was my apprentice that you tried to kill at Olam Seheri before she captured you so easily. So, I consider this a personal matter as well as a military one.
How utterly droll,
Kudaz said, rolling his eyes.
I had heard that you were a professional. I am a scientist,
he insisted. I seek the wonders of the universe. I have no time for personal matters.
It seems to me that your time is completely at our disposal, I reasoned. How long, do you imagine, were you imprisoned in the wand?
I would be curious to know,
the Nemavort sneered. An uncomfortable experience.
I hope you enjoy it someday.
Merely a year, I said, pacing in front of the circle, insight in hand. My baculus was monitoring everything about the conversation and relaying tidbits to the megalith. I found that interesting, but I didn't have time to explore it.
1 year. From what I understand, your master's hourglass is half empty, unless he can figure out a way to escape my spell.
You think highly of yourself, don't you? Accused Kudaz. That will be your undoing, you know.
And Korbal's, he predicted. Ego always ruins the great.
Ah, you think me great?
I wouldn't say so, I demurred. In fact, I consider myself a failure. As I'm sure do these noble Alka Alon, I said, gesturing to Lord Letheran and Lelastian. Both of them looked at me curiously. If I was the incredible Humani prodigy that I was supposed to be, I would have returned from Olam Seheri with Shurul shattered to bits and Korbal dead at the point of my blade.
As it is,
I sighed, feigning defeat, I have but little to show for it. Mycin Amana, and you. And Mycin is decidedly the more important piece to this game, I said, shaking my fist. I was relying on Kudoz's lack of experience with human expressions. It wasn't my best performance,
But despite his pretensions, Kudaz's own ego would not allow him to be second best.
"Maisin Amana," he scoffed. "She's a distraction. Korbal is a fool to devote himself to such a fancy. Not when the real mysteries beckon so clearly. All of these new animals," he said enchantedly. "That bird, that girl, so many new creatures to study. While we slept, a new world blossomed. We have an entire new biome to dissect, and he's living in the faded past," he sneered.
"I am sympathetic," I said, with an exaggerated sigh. "He's set the least of his minions upon me and promises them great position in return for my head. It's embarrassing," I admitted, glancing at the others in the room. Gareth and Taran seemed confident of what I was doing. Letheran looked near to Fitz over my taunting. The Lastian seemed open to my success or failure.
"They sent Gacha Katar against me," I sneered.
"Why not send Stulkadui? It would have been less embarrassing."
"A pitiful warlord," snorted Kudoz. "He would do anything to curry favor with our dear lord,"
the Nemovort said, as he bent and tried his muscles within the containment circle.
"He's no better than a thug, a mindless brigand who murders at command."
Gaja Katar was not even that adept. "He did not last long," I conceded, "even against me. And you know how exaggerated my powers are," I said sadly.
"That is indeed what I told my master," Kudoz insisted. "No mere Humani wizard could be as formidable as rumor has it. You would trust the reports of the Gavani about such a matter? Why, the Humani are no better than vermin. Fascinating in form, yes, but no better developed than the Talalon or some of the poorer sorts of Karshak. I said so in open council."
"Yet there were those who spoke against you," I said sympathetically. "They came out in force in your absence. Our spies heard what they said," I added, as if conferring a secret. "It was not flattering."
"What did they say?"
he demanded suddenly.
"Not that I care, mind you. I am one of the elite. My devotion is to pure science and observation. The nattering of sycophants concern me not." "What did they say?"
he urged. "That Kudoz was clearly wrong in his estimation of Humani magic."
"The old fool," I added, "because why wouldn't I?" "Yet it was not the great wizard, but the mere girl who took me,"
he trailed off. "Yes, I was thinking the same thing," I sighed. "The great and powerful Kudoz, master of science and sorcery, with the resources of Olum Seheri at his command, was removed from play by a wounded bird and a little girl. Humiliating." Korbal was not pleased. "That was what our spies heard," I confirmed, "among other maneuvers. In your absence, the power centers around Korbal shifted, of course. Shirul is captive. Maisin Amana is captured. Gaja Katar is defeated. I don't even know if he's been reconstituted," I added, referring to Korbal's ability to reclaim and renew the Enneagram of the Nemovorti into a fresh body after their deaths. I had no idea how it worked, or what was involved, nor did I truly know if Korbal had brought Gaja Katar back from the dead, but it seemed like a good tactic to take, and it had the desired effect.
"And who did opposition form around?"
Kudaz asked, eagerly. "Which of the thugs and charlatans stood forth as the new champion in court? At the moment, it seems Shakathet is the favored in Korbal's eyes," I said reluctantly. "But that could change, depending on his fortunes. The sciences have been all but forsaken in their quest for military conquest," I continued sadly. "Research has been all but halted until Korbal is freed from his body."
"What?"
Kudoz asked sharply. "Before I departed Olum Seheri, I used the megalith to bind Korbal to his current body. While formidable, it is also deteriorating. I doubt he has more than a year or two left. When it fails, his enneagram will dissipate and not be recovered. He's seeking a way to break the binding. But without the megalith, well, the irony is that I will likely outlive your undead immortal master," I smiled.
then Shakathet will take power, and I can contend with him.
Shakathet, Kudoz scoffed. Unlikely,
he dismissed with a wave of his bony fingers. He's an able commander, but he lacks the political power to consolidate his position over the rest of the Nemoforti.
He enjoys significant and shadowed support, Letheran suggested.
And others enjoy the support of the Alondradrian or the Gervani, he rejected.
It matters not. Shakathet will not rule, despite his strong position, he predicted.
He has not the knowledge or the subtlety to contend with, well, our greatest allies, he said, breaking into a ghoulish grin.
Only one who understands them and their interests will have the power to bargain with them. Shakathet has not been admitted to those mysteries.
So, who will rise to take Korbaz's throne when he has faded? Letheran asked. Who has the power to contend with these other forces?
With Mycin, Absinthe, and myself?
Only a few know the nature of our potential allies. Fewer, still, who would have the courage to face them, let alone bargain with them, should we prevail. Only Korbal is bold enough to do both.
What is so fearsome about these allies?
The Lastian asked for the first time. She was in her original form, the short and naked one. She seemed strangely hesitant about approaching Kudoz.
They are vassals of the Formless,
Kudoz pronounced, enjoying the weight of the doom he spoke.
Agents of those who dwell in the deeps. Since ages past, they have strived to free their masters. They have incredible power, dark forces the Alon cannot even comprehend, he bragged. Races who have sworn an eternal loyalty to those who live in the bowels of our world. They have contended against the Vandal to rule Kalidor and free their masters from their prison.
Why would Korbal even consider such an abomination? Letheran asked, his voice hoarse. To seek out such dangerous powers invites destruction.
I said Korbal was bold, sneered Kudoz. It is perhaps his most intriguing aspect. What good is immortality if the world around us is doomed?
He seeks the vassals of the Formless to form a bargain, our assistance with their quest, in return for a mastery over Kalidor's surface, the defeat of the Vandal, and escape from this doomed world before they destroy it, he announced triumphantly.
You would set the world on fire to rule its ashes?
Letheran asked condemningly.
Kalidor will fall one way or another,
Kudoz predicted. Why allow such an opportunity to go to waste?
If dissecting a living being during its death throes is instructive, imagine the potential research that could be done during the collapse of an entire biosphere. The emergence of the Formless from the deeps will be but the final, inevitable act in the conclusion of the study. The ultimate scavenger species, devouring every bit of magic and destroying every rival. Perhaps what grows from the ashes would be better, he considered philosophically. In a few million years, this might be an interesting place again.
You will not be around to see that, I insisted, a growl in my voice I didn't intend. It's difficult for me to talk with an absolute nihilist without some visceral reaction.
I wouldn't be so certain,
Kudoz shot back. The moment I am destroyed here, I will be reconstituted anew in Ulam Seheri, and Korbal finds me a valuable asset. He shall send for me soon enough. I have knowledge that he requires, he bragged. If he is to assume his intended form, he needs my assistance, and that of my Sin Amana. He will spare no effort to do so, he predicted with confidence.
That doesn't seem to be where his favorite, Shakathet, is focusing his attention, I pointed out.
Indeed, there has been no real attempt to locate you, much less rescue you, and I need not threaten you with death to compel your advice. If I decide you are not useful anymore, I will simply put you back into that timeless void and destroy the key to it. You will be trapped in an eternal nothingness forever, with no hope of escape. You will be forgotten. As if you never existed, I pronounced. The threat did seem to disturb Kudoz.
Don't lie to me, human, he snarled. Do you not realize who you have captured? You would be a fool to discard such an advantage. If he puts Shakathet in the field against you, it is to distract you from his attempts to recapture me. Other wiser heads will be pursuing that, while your armies slay each other. This is not a war that will be won on the battlefield, he predicted. Victory will be snatched from the dark places in the world, in the deeps and the catacombs, where the ancient powers lie in wait.
I think he's reduced to vague threats and obscurities, I suggested to Letheran. He tells me nothing about Shakathet.
Perhaps he is useless, as you suggested. Let's put him back in the Hoxter and break the wand, I proposed.
I would enjoy nothing more, Letheran agreed, and reached for the wand. Wait! Kudoz nearly shouted. I will prove my worth. Not that it will do you any good. Forces have already been set into motion. But Shakathet? He is a mere thug, without subtlety or curiosity. A mindless servant sent to remove a pest. He's brutal, Kudoz conceded. But does he have leadership potential? I think not.
He stared at me with those cold, dead yellow eyes.
He can be fooled with a clever ruse. He has no capacity for novelty, and he is slow to react to quick-changing conditions. If he should assume Korbal's throne, it would be as another's puppet. Are you satisfied, wizard? Shakathet is a strong buffoon. He is a club for wiser hands to wield in the service of greater policies. He conflates complexity with sophistication, and is easily distracted by unimportant details. The loyalty he demands is repaid in pain and punishment for the slightest failure or deviation from his plans. He is inflexible, Kudoz summarized. Present him with a puzzle and he'll stare at it for hours, like an idiot child. I have told you what you wish to know. So you have, I agreed. I therefore promise not to break the wand once you are back inside.
But I told you what you desired, Kudoz protested.
And in so doing, you have proved your worth as a hostage, I conceded. Congratulations, you've saved yourself from the ignominy of oblivion. But that doesn't mean you escape, I continued. It just means we're putting you back in your hole and will take you out again when we desire.
No, wait, Kudoz begged. I have other uses. I am a genius. I know things about this world that not even Korbal suspects.
You are one of the most murderous sadists the Enshadowed ever produced, condemned Lelastian. You are a stain on the very idea of science. Your research is an abomination, and all of it together does not justify the suffering you've inflicted.
Begone, Kudoz,
she said, taking the wand in her little hand. It shook as she prepared the spell.
Back to the eternal void, which is more than you deserve.
She nearly shouted and made the Nemovort vanish.
Well, that was unhelpful,
Letheran said dryly. Lelastian was still staring at the space in the confining circle where Kudoz had been.
On the contrary, I countered, it was extremely helpful, in a number of ways.
I learned a lot about Kudoz, for one, I ticked off on my fingers. I learned a bit about Korbal, and a lot of useful things about Shakathet. More importantly, I learned that the Alon invited us to live on a doomed world, I added lightly. I took the wand that held the Nemovort from Lelastian's shaking hands and replaced it on the rack where it had lain. In fact, that's the second time that someone has informed me that Kalador is doomed, no matter what. And since I know you two don't like each other, you're not likely to let each other get away with lying.
That is a deep subject.
Letheran said quietly, not one for casual conversation, he added, glancing at my fellows.
Oh, we're all just good humani here, I said sarcastically. Who are we going to tell?
The Vandal?
They already know, apparently, I pointed out. Lelastian looked startled. And now we humani know, at least a few of us wizards.
What does it matter to you what happens to this world thousands of years from now?
Letheran challenged.
It will not be you who suffers through the terrors of its destruction.
Who's to say? I challenged, getting that kind of righteous indignation that arises every time someone rubs their longevity in my face. I might manage immortality myself one of these days. But my descendants, Trig bless them, should still be around. For their sake, and the sake of every human on Kalidor, I think we deserve some answers. Lelastian and Letheran looked at each other. Perhaps they were speaking mind to mind, or just thinking rude thoughts about each other and me, but eventually Lelastian surprisingly spoke. I will speak to the Alka-Alon Council about this, she promised. It is not a topic to be lightly discussed, nor will you be seen as an acceptable authority by some, she said, chewing her lip nervously. There are protocols for that sort of thing, but I will bring it to their attention, she pledged. As will I, Letheran sighed. We do not want to instill a sense of panic, in your folk or in ours. It is a delicate matter that must be handled carefully. Well, do it quickly, I growled. Unless I do discover the secret of immortality, I'm only going to be around for another 40, 50 years or so. It would be nice to get a straight answer from you people before I die. Come on, fellows, I called to Gareth, Ruderol and Taran. Let's go protect our mud huts from the mean bullies and let the grown-ups figure out how to save the world.
Chapter 8 The War Council of the Mangelor. An anxious mind seeks counsel and wisdom to soothe the soul. Kasari Proverb, from the collection of Janik the Rish. The interrogation of Kudoz left me disgusted, irritated, and angry. Hearing of Kalidor's doom from the lips of the enemy, and then having it all but confirmed by the Alka-Alon, began a simmering frustration that threatened to overwhelm me. It wasn't that 3,000 years was just too soon for the world to end. It had an effect on how I approached all the other problems that faced me, and it was frustrating that such vital information was denied to me. It demonstrated the arrogance of the Alka-Alon when it came to such things. Indeed, I extended that to the Karshak, the Enshadowed, the Nemovorti, even the Vundel, all long-lived species who saw us short-timers as fleeting novelties, or ignored us altogether, shared that same arrogance. We wouldn't live long enough to suffer such a terrible fate. The implication was that humanity would likely be extinct on Kalidor by then, and that was just not part of my master plan. Luckily, I was distracted from the fate of the world by the more pressing matter of the fate of the coming war. After our midnight meeting with Kusi, and subsequent divine blessing of our secret alliance with the Goblin King, it was time to turn our serious attention to the war. As much as I desired to indulge in more academic pursuits, there was an undead Dark Lord with an army out there who was determined to kill me and ruin my lands. That had to be dealt with before I could consider saving the rest of the world, or even discovering the nature of the threat. Mavone was aggregating the many fonts of intelligence that had been rolling in, and was close enough to having an assessment of Shakathet's forces, their disposition and likely destination, that we needed to start planning, based on that knowledge. He's the one who called the War Council of the Mangelor. The council was necessary. Vanador had defeated the horde of Gajakata just before Yule, but this was not a victory party. We had to arrange our defense from the threat from Shakathet, who promised to punish my realm. Mavone wanted the commanders and major lords to convene to discuss strategy and tactics. I could spare the time, I found. Things were getting settled at home. Alia was involved in her creamery, the children were enjoying the first clear days of the season, and there was nothing pressing requiring my attention in Vanador. It was time to hold a war council. Thankfully, mind-to-mind communication and liberal use of the Waystones made arranging such a thing much easier than organizing the Council of the Wilderlands. Megalyn Castle was not an ideal place to hold a meeting of the Mage Lord's aristocracy, but it had two things that made it superior to any other location. It was secure, with more than 3,000 knights and men-at-arms guarding its walls, and it was centrally located to my new realm. Considering how difficult it is to travel in the Wilderlands in winter for those without witchstones, it was the logical choice for the meeting. Mavone, my constable and chief of military intelligence, had not taken more than a few hours to celebrate our victory over Gajakatar before scurrying off to aggressively scout our next foe. He had given us enough information in the ensuing weeks to have some understanding of the danger we faced. It was at Mavone's prompting that I called the council. I wanted to inform and consult with my senior nobles, those responsible for the security of the lands they held, and prepare them for the second attack. That's what counts, too. There was little question of attendance. Most of my nobles were good friends and long allies of mine, and they were eager to respond. Others, like the Baron of Festalen and the Lord of Yelin, were mundane lords, who recognized the vital importance and political prudence of attending the Count Palatine's first war council. While Gajakatar had been a threat for Vanador in the north of the province, Shakafet promised to menace a wider range of territory when his legions began to march. I had encouraged participation by sending High Magi to the mundane lords to facilitate transport by means of the Alcan Ways, where possible. There was no need for anyone to get delayed by a late-season snowstorm when we had the power to teleport. Azar was all too happy to host the event. He loved showing off his massive keep, undergoing its second major expansion since he took power. A third bailey was being added as well, encompassing the Iron Band Depot and a number of new barracks for Azar's growing army. The complex within contained the colonel of a second keep he planned for, someday. While Megalin looked severe and dire against the grey sky, it was also an imposing symbol of our defiance against the darkness in the west. He hosted the council in a large chamber in the main keep, what used to be the Baroness's old apartments. It had undergone a radical redecoration since Azar took power. He used it as a trophy room for his victories now, and captured goblin banners and the broken staves of Gavani shamans were prominently displayed. A dragon's fang, his reward for his brave assault on the beast that razed the palace in Verone, was set in a place of honor in a specially built case that was mage-light enchanted to perpetually illuminate the savage reminder of Azar's personal valor. And Azar's personal collection of mage blades and other weapons lined one curved wall of the chamber, in case anyone was in danger of forgetting what a badass he was. Mage Lord Bendenal, called the Outlaw, was Azar's castellan, and the one actually running most of the castle on his behalf. He was, therefore, responsible for organizing and executing the council, and he'd prepared with the efficiency I'd come to expect from the man. He'd arranged the chamber with five long tables, placed in a pentagon around a central space. Each table represented a region or interest of the realm. My staff and I were placed along the bottom of the configuration. The seven mage lords in charge of the peel towers were seated to our right. Beyond them, the barons who ruled south of the Wilderlands escarpment, the barons of the Pearwoods, Greenhill, Megalin, and a fellow from the small town of Lendeen held forth. The barons who ruled north of the escarpment, the lords of Lutans, Caliad, Vanador, and a representative lord of the scattered and unorganized domains of the Wildwater Vale, were seated at the fourth table. The fifth was comprised of the leading clergy of the Mage Law, an emissary from the Iron Band, and a representative from the Lord Steward of Verone. While I had no command over the summer capital, including them in my councils, concerning a war which could well involve the city, was only prudent. There were others present. As the council in Verone, the walls were lined with lordlings, captains, and interested parties who didn't merit a seat at the council, but were invested in the results nonetheless. Jennick was there, as was a surly-looking Brother Bright, as well as several Iron Band captains.
"That should be everyone with a stake in the conflict," Bendenal explained, as he sought my approval for the arrangement the day before the council began. "Unless you want to invite the Alka Alon and the Goblin King?" I looked at him sharply, trying to distinguish if he was making a sarcastic jest or was hinting at other, more secret matters. My backyard tacit alliance with the exiled Goblin King was a closely held secret, I thought. But it was possible Bendenal knew of it already. It was hard. Bendenal's face is difficult to read, by intention. He was a subtle fellow, for a war mage.
Ash-Akal sends his regrets, and Lord Letheran has a conflict with a prior engagement, I said, because I'm a subtle fellow, too. We can send them a dispatch afterwards. I think we have a sufficiency of representation.
Ordinarily, I'd settle out a council like this based on politics, he admitted. But with most of these postings being so new, there hasn't been time for politics to take hold as yet.
Don't worry, it will bloom soon enough, like mould on bread, I assured him with a smile. But at a minimum, I hope we'll be able to set a good strategy toward the war to come before it begins to do damage. I don't want to give my speech before the entire council gets here, but from what Mavone tells me, I'm afraid that Megalyn may bear the full force of the attack at some point. At least it's a possibility, I admitted.
I've been working under that assumption for the last 4 years,
Bendenal nodded grimly. You've seen the construction. We've been preparing. Every village within a day's ride will be pulled into the walls, he boasted. I have a store of 100,000 arrows and 50,000 quarrels in our armory. We have food sufficient to withstand a siege of 2 years, as well as good, deep wells. An entire section of the Great Hall is now a hospital with space for hundreds of wounded. Not to mention the arcane defences, he added with satisfaction. Over the years, more than 100 war magi have strengthened the wards and spells on Megalyn. And then there are our flanking castles. Flanking castles? I asked, curious. After Tudri was abandoned, he explained, as we retired to Isola, our means of reinforcement were gone. So we devised a strategy of rebuilding or reinforcing the smaller keeps within a half-day's ride of us. Iron Hill, Forgemont, the Iron Ring Forts, Salka Castle, and others in a rough circle around Megalyn. Many smaller keeps were given over to veterans of the Third Commando. If we're besieged, we'll have plenty of outriders to harass and attack the foe. You'll also have outside support, I pointed out, but that's a matter for the council proper. How is Azar's mood since the last war? I inquired as we took seats in his cosy, neatly organized chamber. There was hardly a lick of decoration there. Mendenal is as stoic as Azar is expressive about his glorious career.
Azar? He's eager for the chance to pit Megalyn against a horde. Indeed, he's impatient for the chance. That kind of confidence is infectious.
Our men have high morale, particularly after our squadrons returned victorious from Spellgate. My thanks for their service, I said with a slight bow. They were extremely helpful and wickedly effective in the field. But soon they may have a rival. Sire Tyndall of Caliard seeks to make an improved version of your corps in the horse country of the north, I warned teasingly.
I wish him the best of luck, chuckled Bendenal. We have more than 1,000 horsemen here. Each one thinks he's the incarnation of Duin. Only Azar's ego keeps them in check, and stabling that many beasts is horrendously expensive.
Azar's ego and your organizational skills, I praised. You may be quiet, Bendenal, but you've attracted more notice for it. My thanks for your attention to detail, and my assurance that should we prevail, a higher position is warranted. Let's not parcel out prizes when we might all be dead in a few months, he chuckled, but the thanks are appreciated. Azar and I have a good arrangement here. He keeps the men in line, and I tell them what to do. I keep the castle from falling down around our ears. We do our best not to complicate matters beyond that. For the moment, then, I shall name you my Thane, I decided. That's an older Wilderlands title, from what Janik tells me, a kind of administrative assistant to the Sovereign. It hasn't been used since the settlement, but it's time for a revival. That gives you a post in my nascent court, apart from your role as Azar's castellan. But do not dismiss the threat of higher office, I warned. We face our second foe with the realm half-organized, I reasoned, and I need good people in the right places for us to survive. Let's reassess the situation in the autumn, I suggested. Perhaps things will be clearer then. Bendenal was too gracious to say so, but his stoic mask slipped briefly enough for me to tell he was pleased by both the praise and the prospect of greater rank. The outlaw had an ego, too. It was just not as rapacious as Azar's.
We began the war council the next morning, just after Lords. The Lords of Duin, of course, in such a martial locale, and it was well attended. When the religious service was over, Bendenal called everyone to the chamber and we settled into our seats. Mavone took command after Bendenal's introduction. He gave everyone his best estimate of the force that we would be facing. 65,000 Gervani at a minimum, he reported, his voice grim. Over 100 trolls. 1,000 Draugen. 25 siege worms, maybe more. And there seems to be some indication that Shakafet will employ the giant wyverns, though he is wary of them in battle. But our intelligence says Korbal has had enough of dragons for the moment.
He's not the only one, Azar laughed. Everyone knew about Azar and the dragon at Verone. Azar made certain of it.
In addition, he'll have a large contingent of Enshadowed in his magical core and a few Alon Dradrian, continued Mavone. Whether these will serve as troops, sappers, or field engineers, we do not know. What we do know is that there is a lot of construction in the fields around Fethkala, siege engines, scores of them, he said forebodingly.
They're coming against our castles, Bendenal concluded.
They would need more than this to assail Spellgate at this point, Terleman agreed, but our normal castles are certainly vulnerable to siege. The most likely route of their invasion takes them directly through the central mage lore, to this very spot, he concluded, tapping the table in front of him. In some ways, that's a blessing.
We'll be ready for them, assured Azar. Should they come to Megalyn, they will besiege Death Incarnate, he promised. This castle shall not fail.
Not unless we're ready for him, Mavone said, shaking his head.
As much as you've lauded your great fortress here, this place is not yet ready for a siege. I've toured the other flanking castles in the region, and neither are they. All will need to be strengthened with spells, provisions, and men.
My keepers stood two waves of scrugs and not fallen, said a dramatically ugly woman standing against the wall, smoking a pipe. A third wave will make no difference. Iron Hill will stand, she pledged.
Forgemont is Cormoran's keep, Sandoval pointed out. Where is he?
Overseeing the armory at Ilterdean, I answered. That's more important work for him. We'll fill him in later. We need flash inspections of each keep and assess their needs. We can supply them from the reserves at Vanador and Verone, unless they make a sharp turn and head for Vanador or Verone.
We need to plot contingencies for both, agreed Terleman, as he studied his notes. It is a mighty force, but every time it halts for siege, it presents opportunities for attack and disaster.
He wasn't wrong. Armies who prepared to besiege a castle were themselves quite vulnerable to attack, and without the benefit of walls to hide behind themselves. You had to control the countryside and maintain secure supply routes, for one thing, as well as constantly screen for raiders and counterattacks. The possibility of starvation, mutiny, and disease increased the moment an army stopped moving. If Shakafet intended to take each of our castles, we would just have to demonstrate that point to him. We were well prepared to do so, as it turned out. Bendenal's foresight at strengthening the surrounding fortresses gave us something to work with. With Sandoval's assistance, the Vanador Guard and the other military units we'd cultivated could strengthen them further. We hammered out a surprisingly complete strategy, on parchment, at the Council of the Mage Lore. But no matter what the scenario, it became obvious that some lands would bear the brunt of the assault more than others.
It just doesn't seem fair. You faced down Gadja Katar at Vanador and got away with but a scratch, complained Bendenal. We're going to have our nose bloodied regardless of what happens.
Better a bloodied nose than a broken arm, counseled Landric of Honeyhall.
The villages and settlements can be evacuated, he proposed. Bring them back behind the river to the towers. They were intended to be places of refuge, he pointed out.
That's an awful long way to move an awful lot of peasants, the Lord of Yellen said, shaking his head. Most will be reluctant to leave the holdings they've fought so hard for.
They can rebuild, dismissed Azar.
If they are too tired to walk, they can pick up a spear or a bow and fight on the walls, while their villages burn around them, objected Ambanos, the lord of Yelin. I felt bad for the man. The fords at Yelin made it almost inevitable that his village would be struck in the war. I don't think we'll have to worry about general pillage as much as we did in the first invasion, Mavone countered. Shakothet has definite military goals. To reduce the mage law, capture Minilan, and prepare an assault on Inas Yatharal. Rifling through the peasants' loose change isn't going to be a priority. True, conceded Ambanos. But it's not just portable wealth I'm concerned with. If the planting isn't done, there will be no harvest, he reminded us grimly. If there are Gavani in the fields, there will be no planting, Azar riposted sharply. Tell your people they live on the Count's dole this year, and thank the gods for their lives. It was the usual bickering that broke out after any proposed plan of war. Any disruption to the invaluable agricultural cycle usually meant famine and death for the peasantry and hardship for the rest of us. Losing an entire year of produce without assistance could condemn generations to poverty. I could appreciate their reluctance to leave the little bit of prosperity that they'd enjoyed since the invasion. There was the beginning of a political divide evolving at the council too, I noted. The more militant mage lords congregated around Azar and Terlaman, while the wilderlords and senior clergy, as well as the masters of the towers, were aligning around the soft-spoken Landric and Carmella. There wasn't much difference in policy between them, but the two parties often conflicted in their approach to the crisis. I was pleased that all seemed in agreement about the necessity of meeting Shakothet with our full force. From Mavone's reports and Terlaman's analysis, it was clear to everyone that no less an effort would stop the Nemavort's invasion. The good news is, if we defeat them here and now, we will have vanquished a large portion of the remnants of Sharul's once great legions, consoled Terlaman. Strategically, we would have an advantage over Korbal's forces for a generation. If there are any of us left after this, the Ambanos said doubtfully. Even with all of this planning, we still face a massive army, my lords. We are badly outnumbered. Good steel and stout hearts can only hold the walls for so long. Mighty spells hint at advantage, but wizards often have more than mere spells at hand in a contest like this, soothed Carmella, who'd largely kept out of the planning, save where her expertise was needed. Her holding, Salic Tower, was threatened, should Shakothet cross the river. So was Anguin's Tower and the town of Nandine, where a good many of the evacuees would be staying. 65, even 70,000, sounds like a big number, she continued, but as Gajikata proved, there are problems with having a big army in the field that can be exploited. Those numbers matter in battle, she assured everyone. Until there's a battle, they are merely mouths to feed and feet to move down the road. The longer we keep them that way, the more problems will arise. And if Shakothet manages to keep his army together? Asked Wenik, skeptically. Then he will see it ground up between Megalin and the other castles until there is little left of it, Azar said confidentially. The larger will be supported by the smaller keeps, and the knights of Megalin will be striking at their flanks and rear every time they pause to scratch their hairy asses, he assured. They will be joined by the knights of Caliad, pledged Tyndall. That will give us near 2,000 good heavy cavalry to use to screen and raid, he figured. That won't be enough. We can keep some infantry in the field, out of the direct path of the hordes, Terlaman decided. Let them advance until they stop for a siege, and then peel off as many units as possible chasing us. That still doesn't lead to a decisive victory, Azar complained. Infantry in the field isn't infantry behind castle walls, where they can actually be useful. It's just a contingency, I argued. More pieces on the board. Much depends on Shakothet's actions. But having the units in the field beforehand gives us more options. But does it not keep our strength diffused against such great odds? Asked Wenik, troubled.
Many things can happen between now and when the hordes of Shakothet march, Sandoval conceded. Whether our men fight behind walls or in the field, they will be outnumbered 4 of 5 to 1. Regardless of where we place our men, we can be assured of only one thing. It will be wrong.
Well, I can't argue with that, Telemann said, clearing his throat after a moment's reflection. Let's establish the best-positioned fortresses to strengthen, and then deploy the balance of our force as the map suggests. The second half of the council concerned the actual deployment of the armies and encompassed a much more detailed discussion than I was comfortable with. I ducked out in the middle. Sandoval and Telemann were arguing with Azar, and they kept turning to me for judgment. I wanted them to figure it out without me. I didn't want to get blamed any more than they did. I sought the solace of a quiet balcony overlooking the busy bailey below. My pipe was in my mouth before I knew it, and I relaxed into the role of observer instead of decision-maker. My solitude couldn't last, of course. Before I had taken my fourth puff on my pipe, I was joined by Landrick, of all people. After his role in the war was established, he had likewise sought refuge from the rest of the planning. How many will you be bringing to our aid? I asked conversationally, as we watched hundreds of infantry and scores of cavalry practice below.
Oh, Honey Hall and my other lands are not well peopled, he demurred. I will be bringing no more than 50 to 60 to battle, and even that is severely taxing my lands, he admitted.
If the need was not pressing, I would not make the request, I pointed out.
I blame not you, but Shakothet and his master, Korbal, Landrick agreed, taking out his own pipe. This is no mere war of title or land. This is an existential threat. Of course, Honeyhole will respond, and Greenhill, and all the southern Magelore.